Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein. Welcome to A Responsible Day for the 13th of Cheshvan. And today we get to meet a new posek, a new respondent who I haven't gotten to know before. And one of the joys of this series for me has been how it gives me more of an acquaintance with great scholars whose names I've heard, but whose Torah I haven't had really the opportunities to get to know. So it happens to be this morning, before I got around to doing this, I got an email from somebody who, I don't know if you'd want his name known, but somebody who listens to these podcasts and had heard my discussion in Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about saying Tefillat HaDerech on the way from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv, and he sent me this lovely email where he had actually spoken about it with the Chief Rabbi of Yerushalayim, with Rav Elazar Stern, and with Rav Meir Schlesinger, and he gave me their ideas about it and how they had disagreed with Rav Shlomo Zalman, and how apparently in his time Rav Zolti Alav HaShalom, Zechus Elik Vracha, was the Chief Rabbi of Yerushalayim for a long time, had also disagreed with Rav Shlomo Zalman. So it gives me the opportunity to know more of the world that I haven't always known. So for a while, I've been looking for the opportunity to get to know Rav Vosner. So Rav Vosner's tshuvot appear in the Bar Ilan CD-ROM project. This is Shut Shevet Alevi, and there are many chalakim of them. And I would, as I go through, right, my process is I plug in a date and I find tshuvot, then I go through some of the tshuvot and see ones that I think might be, I might be capable of presenting in a somewhat interesting way. So I was looking. So his tshuvot, as far as I've been able to find them, were very, very brief. Too brief. So sometimes I've taken a few tshuvot and put them together, except that I don't usually find him with a few tshuvot on the same day. I would find one or two, and they wouldn't be long enough for us to do it. So for today, the 13th of Cheshvan, I finally found a tshuva of Vosner's that is, in fact, long enough for us to have a productive discussion. Just a brief biography. Rav Vosner, Alav HaShalom, was born in Vienna in 1914. He learned in Chachmei Lublin, famous yeshiva of Rav Meir Shapiro, who was the founder of the Daf Hayomi and was a Talmud of his, one of the close Talmidim. He came to Eretz Yisrael already in 1939, and then he got to know the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was clearly very impressed with him. The Chazon Ish said he should be appointed the rabbi of the Zichron Meir section of Bnei Brak, which was named Zichron Meir in memory of Rav Meir Shapiro, his rebbe. And he established the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, and he passed away at a very advanced age, just about a year and a half ago, in April of 2015. So on the 13th of Cheshvan of Tuf Shin Dalid Mem, and it's spelled that way because if you spelled it the usual way, then it would be an acrostic that people don't like. It would be referred to destruction, and we don't want that. So Tuf Shin Dalid Mem, so the 13th of Cheshvan was 1983. 13th of Cheshvan of 1983, Rav Vosner got a letter from a man. He'd already had a conversation, an oral conversation, and the man followed it up with a letter, which is always an interesting thing because you talk to a Rav orally, and so the motivation to write it in a letter, and then Rav Vosner will include that letter in his response, is sort of part of a world that I don't know that I've always been part of. So this is from Shut Shevet Alevi Chelek Vav, the sixth part, Simon Kuf Tzadi Zion, number 197. So it's about a woman who got married. It's her third marriage. I think her two previous husbands have passed away. No, must be maybe one divorce. And the second husband passed away. That's the clear part of it. And she married in a third marriage. No, she can't be divorced because she married a Kohen. So she must have lost two husbands. And if she loses two husbands, she married a third. I hadn't thought of it, but I hadn't thought that was what we do. Anyway, I'll have to look that up another time. But the case is, she's married. She's got a third marriage to her husband. She married in Tuf Shin Lamed Bet, 1971, 72. And remember, this question is coming up in 83. So they've been married for a while. And they got married halachically. And the Masada Kedushin, the rabbi who set up the Kedushin, was a well-known Rav, a worthy Rav. He's somebody who has the right to be a Rav, and he's the right to Paskin Halachos. But now it turns out that what she hadn't realized was that her second husband, when he passed away, all of his children had passed away, meaning he had had a daughter, but that daughter sadly passed away in his lifetime. So when he died, he left no children in the world. So leaving no children in the world, his widow, regardless of her age, is required to have a yibum or a chalitza. She got married without sort of realizing that, without knowing that that was true, and therefore she didn't do anything about it. And then she got married to this third husband. And now, 1983, she heard that the brother, or it turns out, this is the year, the brother of her second husband has passed away. There are no other brothers. So now she can't even have a Yibamura Chalitza, because that brother is no, and there are no brothers around. So she doesn't know what to do. And I think it's just now that she's realized that the death of the daughter in the lifetime of her father meant that the widow needed a Yibamura Chalitza at the time. It's not that she knew before. She never knew. Now the brother has passed away. Now she figures out, oh, my husband had no children when he passed away. That should mean I need a Yibamura Chalitza. And now I'm stuck. So here are the problems. Because in Eben Ezer, Simon Kuf Nun Tet, Seif Bet, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like the Gemara Yevamos and Tzadi Ben Bet says, the Shomeret Yabam Shenisait Lazar, that if some, a woman who needs to have a Yibum, is supposed to have a Yibum, got married to somebody else, which she wasn't supposed to do, right? She was supposed to wait for Yibum. So to repeat, in Eben Ezer, Kuf Nun Tet, Samuch Bet, that a Shomeret Yabam, if this woman marries a Zar, marries a non-Kohen, but it's not the issue. She marries somebody other than the Yabam, the lever, or without a Chalitza, before she's done it. So the halacha is that we think that she looks so much like an Eshet Ish, she looks too much like a married woman who's committed adultery. And in the case of a married woman who's committed adultery, she definitely is not allowed to. That's a halacha, all right? So she's not allowed to stay married to the adulterer. She has to leave. So the halacha was paskin that she also has to do that, and therefore she can't stay with the man she married. And in Eben Ezer, Siman Vav Chet, we say the Yevam Lashuk, who got married to somebody else, will also qualify as a zona, meaning she's somebody who's had relations with a man who was prohibited to her, and that will mean she can't marry a Kohen. And this third husband was a Kohen. So we've got a couple of problems. We've got, it seems like, without her knowing it, she has married somebody she wasn't allowed to marry. That should mean she should stay away from that husband just because of the similarity to an adulteress. And it also means she should be able to marry to a Kohen because she qualifies as Zona Derabanan. Right? So that would seem to be a problem. I'm sorry. The Rav Ozner, the question at least, thinks that she'd be a Zona D'oraita by virtue of Yivam L'Shuk, that it's positive Yivam L'Shuk, a woman who's supposed to have Yibum or Chalitza and gets married instead, she's a Zona on a Torah level, I apologize, and that would make her Usher on a Torah level to the Kohen. So that's the question. She's maybe Usher on a biblical level to her Kohen husband, and she might be Usher on a rabbinic, she might be prohibited on a rabbinic level to her husband, whoever he is, by virtue of the fact that she married him without a Yibum or a Chalitza. So the Ran writing the letter to Rav Ozner says, and this is obviously a difficult situation because they're very old. The husband is 80 or over 80. Now, in the original question, we're going to see later that they're going to change their minds about this. But the original question, he says that it seems like he's still able to conduct, he's not so old that they can't have ordinary marital relations. And so therefore that would make it more of a problem because then you'll say they might be having actual relations and that might run afoul of certain halakhic realities. We'll get to later and find out that might not have been true. And that might be a avenue for leniency. But the point is, they're happy together. And so if we separate them, we have to worry that we're going to cause depression, we're going to cause upset, and that might affect their health, and we don't want to do that. And there's also a begam mishpacha. There's also the families will be embarrassed. You know, you had a wedding, you had a marriage, and it turned out you had to separate because it was all wrong. So there's a begam mishpacha there. There's a mark, a black mark against the family. So that's the question he's going to ask. Now, Rav Ozner is also going to look for room for leniency, and that's an important thing about a lot of our tshuvot that we don't always notice as full as we should, that the instinct of poskim when asked a question is when people haven't done anything on purpose wrong, we try to find ways to help them out. And the goal of a poskim and the job of a poskim, the job of a rabbinic decisor, is really trying to help people out and not anything else. That's one point. The other point that I wanted to tell you was that the way my process is, aside, as I said, from plugging dates into the thing, is that before I tape a shiur like this, I find the tshuva, and then I go through it, learning it for myself, and also removing any, let's say, extraneous writing, so that as I'm giving the shiur, I have an excerpted version of the tshuva that I work off of as I share with you the central ideas of the tshuva that we have. So And I generally try not to repeat too many topics because I don't want this to be coming back to the same thing over and over and over again. But as it happens, So it's usually 2 weeks ahead of time that I find the tshuva, and then I leave it for 2 weeks, but I excerpt it that day, I work on it that day, and then I leave it, and then when it comes time for the shiur, I review it, and then I give the shiur on it. So it happens to be, today is the 13th of Cheshvan that you're listening to this shiur. On the 27th of Cheshvan, which was the one that I found for today, Rav Herzog deals with a very similar situation in the late 1940s. Here we have Rav Ozer in 1983 dealing with that situation. He refers to deals with a similar situation, and his attitude is interestingly different from Rav Ozer. So that's just sort of a coming attractions for you. In case you're wondering what's going to be coming, there's a tshuva coming up in 2 weeks that will deal with very similar topics from a somewhat different perspective. So here, let's see what Rav Ozer has to say. Rav Ozer says, Ikar petach ha-heter, the main way to find room to allow them to stay together is that this third husband didn't know that she needed a yibum, because she didn't know, right? He didn't know she needed a yibum. She didn't think she needed a yibum at all, because in her life, in her experience of her second husband, he had a daughter. True, the daughter passed away, but to the extent that she knew about yibum, it was if a man never had children. If I had to casually describe yibum to somebody, I would say, if a man passes away, they never had children, she needs, the widow needs a chalitza or a yibum. But that's not quite accurate, because the truth is, if a man passes away and has no surviving children, and in this case, that distinction is what tripped her up, the wife. She didn't realize that she would need a yibum or a chalitza. Okay, so they went to a Rav, and when the Rav apparently didn't ask a question that would lead her to consider this issue. Meaning, let's say the Rav said, have you been married before? And she said, yes. And he said, your previous marriage dissolved by, and she said, my husband passed away. And he said, okay, did your husband have children or something like that? And she said, yes, a daughter. But something like that. So somewhere in the conversation, the Rav, who was putting together the Kiddushin, did not get to the full story that he would have needed in order to be able to understand that she needed to have a Yibum or Chalitza before she can marry this third husband. So therefore, Rav Ozer says, it's similar to Rabbi Akiva. Eger had said that you can include in situations of problematic situation where you need to find a het there. There's a tshuva of the Rashba that the Shulchan Aruch quotes in Eben Ezra as well in the Ramah, that if somebody does something al pi horat beit din, if a court tells me that it's okay to do whatever it is, and then I go do it, so not me because I'm a man, but let's say a woman. And the situation that the Rashi was talking about is, let's say a woman's husband has disappeared, and she doesn't know if he's dead or not. She thinks he's dead. There's some evidence that he's dead, whatever it would be. It doesn't matter for our situation. But the point is, she went to a court, and the court went through the evidence. The court said, yes, as far as we can tell, your husband, we have enough evidence. Your husband has passed away, sadly. You can marry somebody else. And she does. And then the first husband turns up. So she certainly can't stay with the second husband. But the question is, what about the first husband? So the Rashba said that since she did it al piorat beitin, she's considered a toa, it's considered a shogeget, and therefore she can go back to the first husband, because if a woman, not that she's considered a shogeget, she's considered like an anusa, sort of, meaning there are situations in which her lack of realization of what she's doing means that it's not her fault in any way whatsoever, and therefore she can stay with her original husband. Because originally in intentional adultery, and we'll talk about more of this a little bit more in the tshuva, in intentional adultery, she can't stay with that first husband no matter what. So that actually creates problems today. If you have situations where a woman who has an affair, so it gets complicated in halacha as to whether or not the couple can stay together, not only whether they want to stay together, right? Sometimes you have in popular culture, you'll have this whole story of a woman has an affair for whatever reason, and there's, let's assume there's fault on both sides, and it's not clear in this, and the couple decides, we're going to try to stay together, we're going to try to work it out, whatever it is. Halachically, that's much more complicated, because it's not clear that they're allowed to do that. So the Rashba was saying, in a situation where the woman's getting married to somebody else was a function of a beit din, of a court telling her that she was allowed to, that does not count as adultery in terms of her being able to return and stay with her original husband. In our case, Rav Ozer is saying that there is room to say, based on that Rashba, that since she had a rabbi who performed this third marriage, right, So the rabbi probably should have done a better job of checking out whether she did a Yibur Chalitza and asking questions and whatever, but he didn't. But since she did it, in terms of, since she had a Rav who said, I as rabbi am ready to marry you to this third man, she was allowed to assume that she was not any longer connected to her second husband, and therefore this should be that it doesn't count as adultery, doesn't count as a problem, and therefore maybe we can say she can stay with her third husband. We have another situation like that in Halacha where the Shus Yaakov had said, let's suppose the case is about food. Let's suppose I have some very expensive food. It doesn't have to be so expensive, but I have some food, and I don't know if it's kosher or not, and I send you as a favor to me to go to the Beit Din to ask the Beit Din, to ask the court what the status of the food is. And the Beit Din looks at it, and they ask a couple of questions. They do their investigation. They say, no, this food is not usable. Can't do anything with it. So the shliach throws it out. And then it goes away and it's gone. And then it turns out that they made a mistake. They made a very fundamental error. They were Torah B'dvar Mishnah, such that it's very clear that they were wrong. So if the food was around, it would mean that we're not allowed to eat the food, but the shlich threw away the food. Now, when a messenger does something that damages the person who sent him, and the messenger shouldn't have done that, so usually we can hold the messenger liable for it. So let's say this food costs enough money that I'm going to make a fuss about it. That's always a question as to when people choose or don't choose to make fuss about it. I am giving myself the benefit of the doubt. There's some reason here that I really feel the need to make a fuss about it, and I want the messenger to repay me the value of what he destroyed of mine. So there the Shvus Yaakov says, no. By virtue of a Beit Din having given a ruling, even if we later find out that it was a ruling that was so wrong, it was on a simple matter that was so wrong, the shliach can be considered an anus, and can be considered not to have been his fault that he threw it away, and therefore will not have to pay me. So that's going to help us here as well, that we can say that since she Ravoster says here, it wasn't a court, it was a particular rabbi. And that particular rabbi wasn't judging a matter, he was just putting together a kiddushin. So there's some room to say that maybe it's not such a good heter as we'd like it to be. And the Rabbi Kiva Eger, who quoted this Rashba, had said, you know, it might only be to go back to the first one where there was already a marriage. But in terms of staying in the case, remember the case of the Rashba was a woman had gotten remarried thinking her first husband was dead, because the court said she was allowed to. So the Rashba said she could go back to the first husband. What if, for whatever reason, the first husband doesn't want her, she doesn't want the first husband anymore, and they get divorced? Can she then go to the second man? So the other Rashba doesn't say that, right? So it could be that it's only because of things about the first marriage, such as, for example, if they had children in the first marriage, you want to help raise the children, and you want the children to be in the whole family, whatever it is, but none of that applies to our Chalitza Yibum case with this woman, and she's very elderly. So he says, but maybe you could say that by virtue of the fact they're so old, and it will be so upsetting to them if they have to separate, maybe that will be similar to the reasons that might be given in another case, right? In another case, we might say that the health of the children, the welfare of the children is important enough for us that we want to keep the family together, such that even though ordinarily she wouldn't be able to return to her husband, here we're going to allow her to for the welfare of the children, maybe the welfare of the elderly people would be enough as well, but he's not sure. Meaning Ravoster says, I've added some ideas of my own here a little bit, but he's not sure. He's still unconfident about whether that would matter. So therefore he thinks he can find another petach de hetera. I can find another way to say that they should be allowed to stay together because they didn't find out their mistake, right? And it's an onus, sort of, but they didn't find it out until after the brother passed away. After the brother passed away. So it's not clear in the tshuva how they found it out, but let's suppose the brother passes away and somebody says, ha ha ha, now you wouldn't have been able, not ha ha ha, somebody passed away, but no more chance for Yibum. And then all of a sudden they thought about Yibum Mishnah and they realize that it's a problem. So he says, he thinks that it's not an issue here. And that creates a kula, he thinks. Why is that a kula? Because the whole gezeira, the whole rule that if she had gotten married without a yibum or a chalitza, which wasn't a halachic de oraita, it's not a biblical law that she can no longer stay with that second husband. The Chazal made that rule. It's a din de rabbanan. It's a rabbinic rule because it looks like a married woman getting married to somebody else while she's still married. So maybe you could say that in situations where she didn't know what she was doing and the brother has passed away, already they didn't make that gezeira, they didn't institute that rule for that situation. So the problem with this idea that maybe there was no gezeira here, Chazal didn't make a takana, that was what Rav Vozner suggested, that maybe because she didn't know and she didn't realize she was doing anything wrong and there's no brother anymore, right? That's the key. Since the brother's no longer alive, maybe that's a room to say they can stay together. So the man who he was talking to said, I understand, but with an HSH in that situation, we don't allow her to stay. Meaning, the parallel situation for a married woman would be, let's say she had gotten married, the court that told her she could get married again. She got married again. Then she hears, let's say she gets married in Tishrei. And then in Pesach time the next year, she hears that her first husband had been alive, but then he passed away. So now it's confirmed that he passed away. So we halachically paskin that she cannot stay in general cases. Whether or not, if she'd heard it from a court that she could, that's one thing. But let's say talk about where she didn't hear from a court. We generally say she can't stay with that second husband. So he didn't understand. Why would you say this woman could stay with a husband even though she made a mistake? So Rav Vozner says, no, I think I can stick with my idea because, and I'll show you that in the tour, the Baal HaItur is quoted as saying that let's suppose that the Yabam, the possible brother to have Yibam with, passed away. He says, Tetze, she has to get divorced from the man that she married. Afilu Chazar Unisa'a Achar Shechalatz. Even if she has a Chalitza, the answer has two cases. Even if the Yabam passed away, and even if, not that he passed away, but she went and she had a chalitza, and now she wants to stay with the man that she married, in both cases, the iter held that she has to divorce the second husband in that situation. So, and in the Beis Yosef, wondered about the iter saying if the Yabam passed away, obviously that shouldn't affect this at all. That's like a woman with her husband and the person, and then the husband later passed away. We say she can't say why it. So he says that seems to be the reason that the Shulchan Aruch never mentions that psak. It's not the Shulchan Aruch disagrees with that psak. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention. There's nothing interesting about the fact that the Yabam passed away. But says Rav Vozner, Meiri in Yevamos quotes a Bahag, who says, and this Bahag will figure in Rav Herzog's ideas as well, that says that if she had gotten married already, and she has children, so if her husband is Yisrael, the second husband is a Yisrael, she can do a Chalitza with the Yabam, with the brother of the deceased first husband, and then stay with the second husband. And if her husband was a Kohen, and she has children, she doesn't even need a Chalitza, because if you made her do a chalitza, then she wouldn't stay with that second husband, because a woman who said a chalitza is not allowed to be married to a kohen. And then the children, people will say, oh, those are the children of that second marriage that they had to, that was so wrong they had to separate from each other. And therefore, the Bahagat said what they do is they separate they don't stay married as long as the Yabam is alive, but after the Yabam passes away, they can go back to being married. And the Meiri, after quoting that, concludes there's really no distinction between whether she has children or doesn't have children. He thinks she has to separate from that second husband no matter what. So in that presentation, the Meiri makes it sound like they found out about the existence of the Yabab while he was still alive. They found out about the possibility of a brother who could theoretically do a Yibam or a Chalitza while he was still alive. And that's why all this happens. But maybe in a situation where they never found out that he existed or the need for him, basically, until he had already passed away, so then maybe there's room to say that the Chazal never made a rule about that situation, because then there's no similarity to a married woman. Because, you know, let's suppose she didn't know, meaning if she knew she was married and later finds out the husband was still alive, she was married. But here, she never knew about the need for Yibum until the possibility of Yibum or Chalitza no longer existed. And therefore, Moshe says, from the way the Meiri presents it, then it seems to be that maybe that's a possibility. Now, this Bahag is a minority opinion, but Mr. Rav Osler is not saying that we're going to follow the Bahag. That we'll get to Rav Herzog, and he'll talk about the Bahag. He's saying that by virtue of the way the Meiri presents it, even the Shulchan Aruch postulates it, that even if the Yabam has passed away, that doesn't change anything. She has to get divorced from him. He's pointing out that he thinks there's room to say that if you only found out about the need for Yibum at all, that there was such a thing as a possibility of Yibum after the brother has already passed away, so then that might be room to say that in that situation, Chazal did not make their rule, and you don't have to separate them from each other. And there's somewhat support for this. He points out that Nevin Ezer, Yud Zayin, if Nun Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that let's suppose, this is talking about the marriage case. She was married to a man. She thought she was allowed to get married to a second man because she thought the first man had passed away. She gets married to the second man, and then they come and tell her, oh, you know what, he was alive when you got remarried. Now he's dead. Now, in those days, it could have been a long period of time. So that's what happens, you know, and this, not just in those days, you know, sadly after the Holocaust, there were people who were alive and didn't reconnect with each other for years and years and years. So let's suppose that you had a woman like that, you know, gone through the Holocaust, and among all the terrible things, she'd lost her husband, and she was given the right to remarry. She remarries, and so, you know, she remarries in 48, and she's in 57, she finds out, somebody says to her, you know, I saw your husband, he was in New York after the war, whatever it was, but he died in 55. So she didn't find out about the husband until he had already passed away, and now the question is what she can do. So we've already said she's not, we don't think she's going to be able to stay with the second husband, but what about the children? So the halacha is the first child, no, I'm sorry, yes, so the child she had a child when the husband was alive, and then she had a child after the husband passed away. So the child that she had after the husband was alive, when the husband was alive, he's a mamzer. Unfortunately, sadly, that child has been produced of an illicit union. Nobody was, in any real sense that we can think of, at fault, and yet the child is a mamzer. That happens, and that's why we try so hard to avoid mamzerous issues. But the second child, who's born of a marriage that shouldn't have continued, because we do paskin rabbinically that they're supposed to separate from each other, nonetheless, when they made the rule, they did not include any mamzerus category. So even at a rabbinic level, that second child is not, in any case, in any way, a mamzer, has no problems in his lineage whatsoever. So all of that was what Rav Osler had thought based on their original conversation. Then he gets a second letter from the end of Tishrei. And in that second letter, he turns out that things aren't exactly the same as he had expected to be. So he says he still thinks that they're perfectly allowed to stay together. And he, one of the problems was, well, if she's been married to a man she wasn't supposed to be married, isn't she a zona? And doesn't and can't a zona not stay married with a kohen? He says, I'm not going to respond for that. Mitam ha-kamus ein beritoni lakriya. I've got a hidden reason that I want to discuss that issue, which we'll never know. So that's something to always think about when we have great Torah scholars, what they do choose to tell us, what they don't choose to tell us. So in this case, there's something there that he chose not to share with us. But then the man writing leather had noted that the Gra and the Chazon Ish had tended to say that that you could be mekel, because here it turns out that while we originally said he's 80 and still able to conduct ordinary marital relations, that's not true. Turns out that he's aged enough that we have reason to understand and to know that he's not able to do so. And it's questionable whether he was ever able to do so during the course of their marriage. So therefore, we don't even have a firm halakha, we don't have a firm knowledge they've consummated this marriage, which would change everything, because if they didn't consummate it, and they're not allowed, and they no longer can consummate it, so then already the whole question of them staying together is much different, because they're in halakhic sense is very much more like roommate than like husband and wife, and therefore it might not have any impact, it might not be that we have to treat it as if she's marrying somebody when she was supposed to be having chalitza or yibum, and therefore Rav Osler says it's sort of like a sfeik sveika, right? Those who think that she's that because not everybody agrees that if she got married when she did a chalitza that she made a zona at all. So that's like a suffix, because there's a machloket about it. Then we have this suffix about the reality of the situation, and therefore those two together create a sveika and. And therefore, it's even more lenient. Not only that, since there are some people who think that they could have stayed together, even if they were going to be able to have marital relations, we don't have to turn them aside, as Rav Osler has said, and therefore he thinks it's okay, largely. And about the yichud issues, right? What about just the fact that it's a single man, it's a man and a woman who are together when some would say that they'll have to be together. So he says the fact, you can include all of this together that we've had so far to say, yeah, they're allowed to have yichud with each other as well. Then he says there's lots more that I can talk about here, because there are many opinions of the Achronim about this issue that I haven't gotten into. There's a Rabbi Akiva Eiger, there's a Binyan Tzion, there's an Achriezer, and many others. But since in our situation, they only found out after the Abamin passed away, that creates all these leniencies that we've had, and that's pretty much the way he ends the Tshuva. So that is our first discussion. Come back in 2 weeks and you'll hear another discussion from the perspective of Herzog. That's our first discussion of the question of what happens when a woman remarries and it turns out that she needed a Yibum before her remarriage, and where is she now? Rav Ochsner finds a leniency based on the fact that they didn't know until after the Yabab had passed away, and based on the fact that they are so old that it's unclear that they could consummate this marriage anyway, and that creates other avenues for leniency, such that even though theoretically she would have been a Zona on a Torah level, she would have been not permitted to marry to a Kohen at a biblical level, the Rav Ochsner is telling us that yes, she can stay with this husband, they can stay together, and God willing, live out the rest of their lives in happiness and health with each other. And that is a responsible day for the 13th of Cheshvan. Have a great day.